It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, D-Bro, and writing co-pilot on this fantastic day in fantasy land is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. So, if you have not signed up for FTNFantasy.com, it is not too late, baby. FTNFantasy.com, FTNDaily.com, and FTNBets.com, we are going to be crushing content for the football season, Adam and myself, as well as all of our amazing experts. I want you to head over there today, get signed up, get ready for the football season, because it is back, baby. You could save 5% signing up today with the promo codes of either DBRO, so D-B-R-O, or Pfeiffer, so P-F-E-I-F-E-R, and save 5% for FTNFantasy.com, FTNDaily.com, or FTNBets.com. So on today's show, we are actually, this is one of the last shows before we get into in-season schedule. So just to break this down before we get rolling here, so next week we are going to be starting our in-season schedule. Adam and I are going to be talking waivers on Monday. On Wednesday, we're going to talk four players you need to trade for or trade away to get either on or off of your fantasy rosters. Thursday, we're going to go game by game, breaking down every single game, plays, punts, pivots, all things DFS. So you need to get subscribed, get ready for the season, man. So like I was saying, on today's show, Adam and I are going to touch some news. We're going to talk about some things going on in the fantasy landscape, as well as this is the Battle Royale episode. Adam and I are going to go toe-to-toe, diving into some of his rankings and talking about two different players that he has higher or lower and where we differ. So if you have been waiting to hear Adam and I square off and fight, this is it. This is the episode, man. Adam and I are putting on the sparring gloves, and we're going to go at it. Adam, what's up, dude? You ready for this?
I'm excited. Had the one of the FTN 14 team leagues draft last night, and I got Adam Thielen, so I'm in a good mood. I also got your man DJ Moore, so I'm looking out. I'm looking out for both of us.
Let's go, baby. Let's go. I mean, basically, the title's like just locked up for you then, right?
Yeah, I should add that I also had some guy named Saquon Barkley on my team, so that's cool, I guess. But yeah, I mean, Adam Thielen, and I have Josh Allen, so it's a lock.
Let's go, man. I mean, it sounds like a great squad from what I can tell right now without even staring at the rest of it, dude. So they just need to mail you all the monies, just give it to you right now. I mean, there's really no point in anybody else competing.
Yeah, but Javi's in the league, and he wins all the money, so I got to be careful.
Ah, this isn't League of Legends, baby. This isn't League of Legends. All right, dude, let's dive into some news right here before we get into the rankings. So first item here, I know Alvin Kamara has been making the rounds as far as what's going on with this contract. Both sides have been adamant in the media. Alvin Kamara has been rumored to be asking for Christian McCaffrey-type money, $16 million a year. The team on the other side has been staunch in saying they're in between 12 and 13. We've heard everything that's come out, whether Kamara gets traded and what have you. The latest reports that we're staring at right now is that they're apparently now, after duking it out in the media a little bit, they're not far apart in contract negotiations. Apparently, Kamara went and had a back injection. He had some type of back injury earlier in practice. He's been around the team facility, though. Per Ian Rappaport today, Alvin Kamara and Sean Payton had a nice talk this morning, clearing the air some, and that he's expected back at practice, and the two sides will work on reaching that long-term deal. Adam, are you fading Alvin Kamara at all? Like, where is he at for you right now? Because for me, he's still top three. Like, I didn't move him. I wasn't getting off of him. I told people religiously, all of our subs in our Discord, if he falls outside the top three, pounce. Get him. Draft him. Don't worry about Latavius Murray right now. If you can get Kamara, if he falls at all, you need to scoop him up. But where are you at?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, the report from, I think it was Justina Anderson, saying that the Saints were open to trading him. Thought it was, you know, interesting, but I never believed that he would actually get dealt, and now it sounds like a long-term deal is in the works. I'm a little bit more concerned about this back. I mean, he's apparently getting, like, injections in his back. That's a little scary for me, but, like, I had him for the entire offseason third behind Barkley and McCaffrey. I did move him fourth. I put Zeke ahead of him, which is, like, you know, they're both great, but I just think there's a little bit more safety with Zeke right now. But, yeah, if you're drafting today or this weekend and you're picking fourth, I would still be fine taking Alvin Kamara there, and that's, you know, who I would pick there.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. I was not going to... it all just felt like an entire smoke show, like between his agents and the team. We saw some of these same things last year with Michael Thomas. Like the team, they didn't talk about trading him, but there was a lot of pushback on both sides in the media. And then, whew, Michael Thomas gets like the largest contract ever for a wide receiver. So I don't think that the Saints are willing to walk into week one without Kamara in that backfield. They're all in, set it, forget it. This is Drew Brees' probably last year. They have title hopes, and Kamara is going to be a big, big part of that. So staying on the running back position, moving over to a man that just got paid. Joe Mixon signed a 4-year, $48 million deal. I know we're going to discuss him later. So, spoiler alert, what do you see here? I think that this cements Mixon as a top 12 running back. Now, we're going to get into later where he falls in that discussion, but, I mean, Mixon's a top 12 guy for me. Where do you stand, Adam?
Yeah, this is massive for his dynasty aspects because that was really the only concern. I mean, this is still a young, really productive running back, and his stock was already on the rise with a new offense and Joe Burrow being there. And the only concern was, I mean, there was the quote-unquote headaches and migraines that he had. A lot of people thought it was just him holding out. And now we don't have to worry about it. I mean, he's locked in for 4 years, and, you know, the only decision you have to make about Joe Mixon is, do you draft him ahead of some of these other guys in that range where I think he's clearly in the argument to be, you know, a top seven running back and a top, you know, seven or eight or nine pick in your draft. So, yeah, this is great news. And as somebody who has Joe Mixon dynasty, I was very, very happy to see them agree on a 4-year extension.
Yeah, I think it's a great point about his dynasty value because I think that he is going to I pushed him down. I'm going to have to go readjust some of my dynasty ranks right now because, like, this is probably, and I haven't looked and saw what the numbers are. On paper, it's a 4-year deal. I'm not going to be surprised if money-wise and dead cap-wise, it's more of a 2, maybe 3-year deal, considering his age and everything like that. So I'd be really, really curious to see because the contract linguistics, because that's really where you get the true dynasty safety value out of some of these things. Because when the dead cap falls off, that's the part where the team can move on and really what you need to be looking at as far as dynasty value goes. But, all right, let's dive into this, Adam. Get your boxing gloves on. Let's go, dude. Rankings Battle Royale. First guys up here, Todd Gurley, you have him at RB17 versus David Johnson, you have at RB20. You know I've been very firmly against Todd Gurley. Give me your take on him about why he's above David Johnson, then I'm going to rebut here.
Yeah, and look, this is the running back position, so, like, I'm not sitting here, like, just enamored with Todd Gurley, but, like, there's obvious risk with the injury concerns and the fact that he hasn't even looked 100%. I don't care about what Dirk Cutter said about him getting 15 to 25 touches per game. We talked about how stupid of a projection that was with J.J. Zacharyson when he was on the other day. But for me, I just think Todd Gurley is definitely going to be involved in the passing game. I think David Johnson should be because that's the only part of his game that hasn't fallen off a cliff the last 2 years. He was averaging like 10 yards per target last year. He was really good in that role. We haven't seen it with the Texans and throwing to the running backs. Deshaun Watson is more inclined to just take off with it. And, like, I don't get what they're doing with Duke Johnson because he's clearly really good in that role, but they don't use him. But what if they do start to finally use Duke Johnson in the way he should be used? I just think Todd Gurley has a little bit higher of a ceiling in terms of pass catching. I think David Johnson is going to be better in this scheme, in this offense as a pure runner. But I think Gurley, just given the offense he's in, I slightly feel better about him as a pass catcher, and that's the difference for me. Not to mention, like, they're both – the Falcons will probably have a top 10 offense in the NFL this year. We know they're not going to run the ball at a crazy rate, but when they get down in there, they run the ball a little bit more than people think. And I just don't see them giving Brian Hill or Ito Smith those touches down there when Gurley, for as big of a downfall he's had the last couple seasons with injuries, he's still been really good at converting touchdowns. I don't know. I know the Houston Texans run a lot down there as well, but I think they're going to have Deshaun Watson do that a lot more this year than he even already did. So that's where I'm kind of differing with those two, but they're kind of the cutoff for me. I know you're not touching Todd Gurley, but like, those are kind of the last couple guys to where you know you're getting, you know, 15 touches a game. And then it's like you have the Niners running backs, the Bills running backs, the Ravens running backs. Like these two are kind of like the last running backs where you feel great, even decent about potential volume.
Yeah, look, I know that I've been very adamant against Todd Gurley. My biggest concerns with him is that he's going from a team in the Rams last year that were the sixth highest rushing rate inside the red zone to a team with Atlanta that was the seventh highest passing in the red zone. I think that his touchdown equity could absolutely fall. I don't peg him for any higher because Dirk Cutter over the last, like, and I understand that like Devontae Freeman is not a world beater and neither is Peyton Barber, but both of those guys only average between 13 and 14 ish rushing attempts per game. I think that's pretty much where Gurley probably sits this year, which I get it. Like, he had 14 rushing attempts per game or in that ballpark with the Rams last year, but he lived off of the touchdown equity. And I think that the Falcons are going to be pass first. I think it's pass first all the time. I think it's pass first in the red zone. And for me, with Kelly last year for the Texans, they rushed 5% higher inside the red zone. And if people want to come at me like, okay, Gurley's going to stay healthy and David Johnson can't. David Johnson is not washed. I understand the injury concerns with him. But past that, outside of that, there is not a reason to fade David Johnson this year. You look at the first five games of last season. David Johnson was the RB7 in PPR. And he was running for 4.1 yards per carry. He was at 7.4 yards per target. And which might not, like, a lot of people are like, okay, well, is that really a great stat? Is that really, like, 7.4, is that really good? If you looked at that and you took that sample size and you looked at end-of-the-year finishes, that would have put David Johnson ranked 12th in yards per target over the entire season. So when he was healthy, because he had a back strain in week 5, an ankle issue in week 6, he never played more than 43% of the snaps for the rest of the season. David Johnson was still a productive running back. Now he lands in Houston, who were 12th in rushing attempts. The volume is going to be there as long as he can stay healthy. And this was a really good offense that I think takes another step forward this year. They were 12th in points scored per game last year. So I love David Johnson. For me, this is not close because I think that he is in a comparably really, really good offense with Atlanta. And I know you love the Texans offense too. So I know that you're not besmirching the Texans offense. I know that some people could see, okay, we're splitting hairs, but these are the decisions that people are going to have to make.
Yeah.
When they get into the third and fourth round and Gurley is staring and David Johnson, both of these guys are staring at them on the board and they say, who do I need to go with? That's really what we're diving into this right now, because I'm going to make my case. You're going to make yours. And then people get in their drafts, and that's what they need to decide with. Where do they go, and who do they pick?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if David Johnson can get back to somewhat of what he was, you know, back in like 2017, he could be one of the best values in fantasy this year. And if Gurley can stay healthy, which is probably a bigger if, then he could easily finish as a top 12 guy just off touchdowns alone because he did it last year. Now I know the Falcons aren't going to call run inside the 5 or 10 as much as the Rams did, but yeah, this is an ultimate, you know, this or that, because I don't think you're coming out of your draft with both these guys. You know, they go in the same range and you're pretty much at the point where you need a running back that's going to get touches and you're choosing between David Johnson and Todd Gurley.
Yep, absolutely. So, moving over to our next running back conundrum here. You have Joe Mixon, the brand new, ink is even dry on the contract right now. You have him at RB7, and as well as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you have at RB8. I'm about to sit here and duke it out with you for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I am firmly in that corner. Tell me why you have Mixon higher.
I just think there's still, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the shiny new player in fantasy. Everybody, he's been maybe the most polarizing player in fantasy. There's still some uncertainty with him. He's going to fit this offense as a pass catcher incredibly well, don't get me wrong. But is he going to be the guy in close? I mean, you would think, because Damian Williams has opted out. Maybe they give it to Darrell Williams, but there's still that concern. And Mixon was just so good down the stretch last year. You know, last eight games of the year, he averaged 22 carries per game, over 102 rushing yards per game, 4.6 yards per carry. Now, the receiving totals are definitely, and that's been Mixon's one knock, really, since entering the NFL, is he's not been heavily involved as a receiver. And with all the weapons they have there, I don't know if that's going to happen. I know Kansas City has plenty of weapons, too, but Patrick Mahomes throws to the running back, and he's done it at, you know, as efficiently as anybody since he's entered the league. So that's the one knock. But on the other side, I know Joe Mixon's getting the ball at the goal line and in close. In 2019, he handled 76% of Cincinnati's carries from inside the five. That was one of the highest rates in the NFL. And they're going to be a better offense with Joe Burrow. I know you love Joe Burrow this year. They're going to be a much better offense. The offensive line should be better with Jonah Williams there. I mean, they essentially had two first-round picks because they get Jonah Williams back. A.J. Green will help them just sustain drives as well. I just think Mixon has, and they both have top five upside, don't get me wrong, especially if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is what he was in college as a pass catcher. But I just think that he's 100% going to get more carries per game. And you know, if he gets 3-4 receptions, he will get more touches per game as well. I think he's got a better chance for scoring touchdowns, at least, you know, on the ground. And I just think that I feel a little bit more secure with Mixon, especially now that he's locked in and we don't have to worry about him holding out or anything. He can focus on football, focus on, you know, playing the best that he can, and he's been really, really good when he's on the field. So I'm really, really, and again, I have him 7-8. So like, it's if you took Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Joe Mixon, I wouldn't even blink. I'd be like, okay, that was a good pick. That wasn't a bad pick, whatever. I just slightly prefer Joe Mixon because in a season like this, when the running back position in particular is also really, really weak in terms of the drop-off, I really want to take guys in that first or second round that I know what I'm getting. That's not saying Clyde Edwards-Helaire shouldn't be a first-round pick, but that's just kind of how I draft. I'm more risk-averse, so that's why I'm leaning Mixon. But again, they are both incredible. They're both very well should be first-round picks, and I think I could be easily wrong on all these, so that's full disclosure. Like, these are all so close that I could be wrong on anything, let alone these two.
Well, and that's what we picked all of these because, like we're talking about with the other running backs, fantasy gamers are going to head into drafts this week. They're drafting all their teams, and it's both of these guys are most likely going to be on the clock at the same time, and who are you going to go with? And that's why we picked all of these players and trying to help people make those tough decisions, those tough calls that are going to vastly affect the team builds, what their rosters look like in the entirety of the makeup. So I'm not, like, I don't hate Joe Mixon. I agree with you that I think that he's a first-round pick. Set it, forget it, that's fine. I lean Clyde Edwards-Helaire because I honestly don't know which version of Joe Mixon we get. Like, if you look at last year, before he finished the season with a monstrous Derrick Henry-esque end of the season. So weeks 14 through 17, Mixon led all runners in carries. And he had the most 20-yard runs in the NFL, and he was the RB6 in PPR. Before that stretch, though, he was the RB18 in PPR scoring. So I think that the Bengals go back to passing the ball a ton. Can Mixon get there based off of increased touchdown equity? Yes, I see that in his range of outcomes, but I just don't know if they go back to passing and they're able to do that well, what that looks like as far as his rushing share versus the passing work. I don't think that he gets the targets in the passing game. And so if I look at him as more of a script running back, then I think that he really needs the volume, and at this point, I really don't know if he's going to get that. Versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he is in a fantastic offense. Like, I don't need to go out there and tell you that, yes, Kansas City is it's a good offense to be in, because if you look at Andy Reid's running backs, even just giving the snapshot, like, I'm not going to go back through all of his running backs all the way through his time with Philly. I could, but nobody wants me to hear me rattle off like 20-some-odd running backs and hear all their PPR finishes. Just since he's been in Kansas City, RB1, RB7, RB2, Spencer Ware was the RB17, Kareem Hunt was RB5 and 8, and then Damian Williams was the RB25 in PPR points per game. And if you look at this offense, they live and die. Their running backs are predicated, and all of their volume is not all of their value is not found in volume. It's found in efficiency, and it's found in touchdown equity. So 6 of the last 7 years, Reed's rushing attack has been top 7 in rushing touchdowns. We know that his runners are going to get touchdown chances. 8 of the last 10 years, they've been top 8 in yards per rushing attempt. So the efficiency is going to be there. The touchdown equity is going to be there. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like anybody talking about, like, okay, well, he's not going to get like 20 touches a game. He doesn't need 20 touches a game to be a monster in fantasy this year because of the context of the offense that he finds himself in. So that's why I'm buying in. I've talked in the Discord. I've talked to our subs. And I'm like, look, I will not fight anybody. And I know it sounds like it's probably a hot take. I won't find anybody taking him. If you're worried about Alvin Kamara, which I am not, but if you're worried about Alvin Kamara, I will not fight you on taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a top 3 pick. I will not fight you on taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire inside the top 5. That is how high I think that he can finish. That is, I think that he is an immensely high floor as well. Like, outside of injury, he is an RB1 this year. A slam dunk RB1. And that is his floor this year for me.
No, man, I hear you. I've nothing against Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I just feel a little bit safer with Mixon. I really wish they would start to use Mixon more as a pass catcher because he's really, really good in that role. They just haven't done it. Maybe they do it with Burrow. Maybe with the new offense they change things up a little bit with a new quarterback. But we'll have to see. But yeah, they're both really close. Obviously, I have no problem if you prefer Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I just slightly lean Mixon.
Yep, so moving over to Seattle, buddy. DK Metcalf, you got a wide receiver 22. Tyler Lockett is at wide receiver 24. Give me the case for Metcalf over Lockett.
Another one that I struggle with this for a while. I was going back and forth. I just think that, you know, first of all, Russell Wilson, you know, he's been among the league leaders in end zone throws. I think he led the league last year, and that's why DK Metcalf led the league in end zone targets. Tyler Lockett was also up there as well. But I think if they continue to do that, like, Metcalf, I think, is going to score more touchdowns. He had a lot of plays last year where he, you know, he struggled to bring the ball in. I think he's going to be just overall better in his second year. They're changing his route tree and making him more versatile receiver, which is good for him. They're moving him around a bit more. He's, you know, really been great in camp. I just think if both of these players, I know Tyler Lockett's been one of the most efficient receivers in the NFL over the past handful of years. But I think if they both hit their absolute ceiling, I think Metcalf has a better year. I really wish that Seattle would just open up their offense and let Russ cook, but I don't think that's going to happen. I was really, really impressed with what Metcalf did in his rookie season. I think he's only going to get better. Whereas Tyler Lockett, like, he's really, really good, but is he going to get better than he's been? I think we kind of know what he is. He's just a really efficient, really good receiver, where Metcalf, he could legitimately be. Like, I think if one of these guys were to finish as a top 12 receiver this year, my money would be on Metcalf, and that's why I have him slightly higher. But yeah, they're both, you know, right in that top 24 range for me. I just personally have been taking Metcalf over Lockett because I think his untapped potential is too enticing for me to kind of pass up on.
And so I heavily lean Tyler Lockett with this because I think that last year's injury for Tyler Lockett really skewed how people view these two wide receivers. If you look at Tyler Lockett, weeks 1 through 9 when he was healthy, he was the wide receiver 5 in PPR points per game. He got hurt in week 10. He was hospitalized with swelling. He had the hematoma and stuff like that. They did not talk about him being healthy again until week 15. And his production just fell off a table after that injury. So weeks 11 through 14, didn't go above 43 yards receiving in any game. Over that stretch, he was the wide receiver 90 9 in PPR scoring. I think that that really, really impacted how people view these two wide receivers. I get that DK could take a step forward in his second year, but I'm immensely on the Lockett train because even what I'm talking about, he was ruled fully healthy. They declared him like back ready to rock in week 15. So weeks 15 through 17, wide receiver 20. Production went boop, bounced right back, top 20 wide receiver. If you look at how they used Metcalf last year, they basically, like, everybody craps on Seattle about, like, what they do and they run and all this kind of stuff. Their utilization of DK Metcalf was phenomenal last year. They basically said, okay, we're going to take what you do and we're going to let you ball out in the things that you do well. His two highest routes were go routes and slants. Mm-hmm. All they said, and there was so many, like, jokes, myself included, I was out in the fantasy space talking about Metcalf and his go routes. But that's what Seattle did. They said, and I know it sounds like we always talk about donkey coaching, but they did something smart. They said, DK, go ball out, go run go routes, go run a ton of slants, use your physicality to your advantage versus cornerbacks. And I look at Lockett, and yes, I think that he's a more well-rounded receiver. He's going to get better matchups in the slot versus cornerbacks. I'm all on the Lockett train, man. We've seen it over a half a season. I think that a lot of people look at this and think that they are very, very close in value, and I just view it differently. Like, I think Lockett is head and shoulders above DK as far as where he's at as a talent profile and where he's at on the target pecking order right now, because last year when Lockett was healthy, he had a 25% target share versus DK at 18%. So I just lean Lockett. Versus a lot of people see this as close. That's the divide. I don't think that it's really close for me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like Metcalf led the league in end zone targets in his rookie year, but Tyler Lockett was fourth. I mean, they're not throwing anybody else down there. Like, I feel like Lockett is going to be insanely efficient. We know that because he's not only insanely efficient, but Russell Wilson's the most efficient quarterback in the NFL. It's not a secret why both these guys have been super efficient. So it's been such a great kind of combination. I just think Metcalf is just, at the end of the day, between his size and speed, he has such an advantage over all these players in the NFL. And if he can be a little more versatile with his routes and utilization, he has just an untapped absolute monster ceiling. Whereas Lockett, I think we've seen his ceiling already. I don't know. I could be wrong. And I think both these guys I'd be fine with as, you know, lower end wide receiver twos. That's where I have them ranked. But I'm just really, 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 really intrigued by DK Metcalf in year number two. So
yeah,
it'll be fun to watch
that,
though. And it'll be fun for Russell Wilson to throw to these guys.
And I, it's not that I don't think that DK can take a step forward, but like for me, it's projecting something that we haven't seen yet in terms of his growth as a wide receiver in terms of route combinations. And that's why I because of that and production previously, I lean towards Lockett. So on to Tampa Bay and two wide receivers that you have both of them finishing with fantastic seasons. It really comes down to, and this is a decision people are going to have to make, Chris Godwin is going anywhere from the second to third round, as well as Mike Evans. Mike Evans has been firmly planted in that third round conversation. I lean on the side of Evans. You have Godwin as wide receiver 6 and Mike Evans as wide receiver 11. Tell me the case for Godwin over Evans.
Yeah, so I'm not a believer that this narrative of Tom Brady doesn't throw deep. We've talked about this. Tom Brady can't throw deep. Yep. Mike Evans is only going to run, you know, streaks and stuff like that. That's not where I'm at. For me, I think Godwin is just going to be a little bit more consistent with his third down utilization, his, you know, slot utilization. You know, whether you believe in the narrative of Tom Brady throwing deep or not, like there is the fact that he does tend to lean towards the slot. These guys are both going to get plenty of targets, so it doesn't matter. But I think Godwin is going to be more consistent. He was an absolute monster last year. First season as a full-time actual player was top 10 in routes, snaps, receptions. Like, he's just so safe to me. And I think if Tampa Bay, and they obviously will, has less games where they're chasing points because Jameis threw the ball to the other team four times. Like, not only were they throwing the ball more, but that was when Jameis was in his true DGAF mode, where it was, we're not just throwing these dump offs to try to get down the field and get quick points. We were taking shots to Mike Evans, where, you know, if they're not doing that, I think that hurts Mike Evans' ceiling a little bit. And it does for Godwin too, but Godwin's just going to be more the intermediate guy. I feel like Mike Evans at 11 is too low. The problem I'm having is I'm one of the highest on Adam Thielen, so I have him as wide receiver 7. I think a lot of people don't have him over Evans, so that's where that changes. And then I really like DJ Moore over Mike Evans and Kenny Galladay, so like those guys I have ahead of him because I think they have similar, like especially Kenny Galladay, a really, really similar player, but their offense hasn't changed at all. So I think he has a good spot there for me. At the end of the day, I think Godwin's just going to be a little bit more consistent, but I am by no means against Mike Evans. Like, I think we get too confused at times where you have to choose this, or like you have to choose between a player, and obviously you maybe don't want to do it in traditional redraft leagues, but like you don't have to not like Chris Godwin to like Mike Evans and vice versa. You can like both, and I do. It's just I also like a couple other receivers, and that's why Mike Evans falls to number 11. I might move him up to 10, though. I might move him ahead of Allen Robinson. But, yeah, they're both top 12 receivers, and I still think Brady's going to throw a lot of touchdowns. I just don't know if the pass attempts are going to be anywhere close to what they were last year for Tampa Bay.
So I lean Evans in this discussion.
Yeah, you've been getting higher on Evans the last couple days.
Yes, I absolutely have, because I think his role as the outside wide receiver does not change at all. And I do have questions on how much 12 that Tampa Bay runs. I mean, if you look at last year, without even the addition of Gronk right now, they were 10th in 12 personnel percentage. Now, it's only 23%, but I'm really curious if that bumps up a little bit more this year, because you're running the 10th highest rate in the league of 12 personnel with freaking O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate as your number two tight end. Look, I can just say it, man.
Cameron Brate could start on a handful of teams. Cameron Brate's good.
He's better than Irv Smith.
No, he's not.
Oh my God!
I'm kidding.
Don't dare.
I'm kidding. I love Irv. I've taken Irv in like six leagues already because of you.
I was like, you really want to fight today? We're gonna fight, man. Don't besmirch that man's name like that,
dude. He's so like, if we're going completely off topic, but if Irv smashes this year, I'm giving you half my winnings in any league or whatever because I liked him, but then you made me love him. So
let's go, dude. But all right. Let me turn the train back, get this back on track here. Evans versus Godwin, like I was talking about, if they run more 12 now with Gronk being in town, if that percentage bumps up more, we're going to see Chris Godwin push to the perimeter, and I have more questions about Godwin as an outside wide receiver versus that is where Mike Evans has made his bread from day one. And I have no questions about his role and could that change. And if you look at Godwin last year, Godwin, when he was asked to play outside or he faced man and press coverage, first of all, he only saw a press on 18 of his targets for the entirety of the season. So out of nearly 120 targets, he only saw press on 18 of them, and he only secured 17 of those. So I do have worries about Chris Godwin versus press coverage versus man. He was a little bit better, caught 19 of 28 targets, but he really eviscerated zone coverage. And can he still see some of that on the outside? Sure. It's not going to be a full, like, just plateful of man and press every single week. But if we're talking about roles and can these things change, versus Mike Evans even had the red zone role over Chris Godwin. Mike Evans played only 13 games versus Chris Godwin's 14. So it does factor in there just a little bit. But Mike Evans led the team in red zone targets 16 versus 12. So if we get a full complement of games, I think that Evans still holds the red zone role over Chris Godwin. I think that his role is unchanged. And I have more questions about Chris Godwin as an outside wide receiver than I do versus Mike Evans and his role. So that's why I lean, if I'm picking apart these two wide receivers and people are on the clock and they're saying, do I take Godwin now in the second round or even the third versus Mike Evans? I will lean adamantly towards taking Evans in the third over Godwin in the second, or even if both of these guys on the board. I know what I'm getting out of Mike Evans. and what you're getting out of Evans is a freaking
1,000 yards every year.
Yes, he is going to get 1,000 yards. He is going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,200 to 1,300 yards, and he's going to fall in the end zone 8 to 12 times. It's going to happen. Brady's deep ball was not washed. Evans' role is unchanged. Evans is going to still be a stud this year.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I'll say is I think most cornerbacks and most defensive teams would still lean Evans as the alpha. So I think he's going, like, week one, he's probably going to see a lot of Marshon Lattimore, for instance. Like, I think those corners are going to gravitate towards Evans more, where that's another reason why I think Godwin will just be a little bit more consistent. I think Godwin's going to be, like, a massive, massive third down target for Tom Brady. Like, I think he's going to be the guy on third down. Now, do you get points for third down conversions in most leagues? No, you don't. But I just think that's going to be, it's going to help to his overall consistency. But for me, I'm probably taking Adam Thielen over Bosa, so let's be honest.
I'm not going to fight you on that. Nobody's there to fight Adam Thielen. As much as I love Irv Smith, Adam Thielen, if he stays healthy.
Yeah, but you got to remember, dude, he's injury prone, D-Bro. He got hurt one year. He's injury prone.
Oh, we won't even dive into all that because that narrative is garbage. And anybody slinging that is probably going to lose their fantasy leagues. And if you're listening to him, you're probably going down with that ship. So stay away from bad narrative street like that. So on the last debate that we got here on the docket.
This is my favorite one, by the way.
Heart. Well, it hurts my heart a little bit because I love Gardner Minshew. I love him for this year. But you got him at QB 15. And another guy that I see massive, massive, massive regression is coming for Jared Goff this season. You got him at QB 17. Tell me why you have Gardner higher.
So full disclosure, Jared Goff is somebody I was already, before we, you know, made the agenda for this podcast, that I was already starting to come around on a lot more. But I'll get to that in a little bit. Gardner Minshew is that dude, man. He really is. Already projected his team to be top five in pass attempts entering the season. Now they've waived Leonard Fournette, so they're running. You know, they were much more inclined to just say, okay, we'll give him the ball 20 times. They're not inclined to give Ryquil Armstead the ball 20 times, or Zigbo or whoever. So, I mean, Minshew, look what he did last year. Despite being a very, very average at best passer, first 9 weeks of the season, he was 10th among quarterbacks in fantasy points, 11th in fantasy points per dropback. He was 6th among all quarterbacks in rushing attempts during that span and 5th in rushing yards. His 49 scrambles led the NFL among quarterbacks. I don't think that's going to change this year. I think that's a significant part of his game. And like, you look at their team, DJ Chark, Laviska Shenault, Chris Thompson as a pass catching back is an upgrade over Fournette. Chris Conley, I wish Josh Oliver was healthy. Like, I still think these weapons are good enough. I think, and I've talked about it, I've used this kind of, this comp a lot. I think we could see similar usage to Blake Bortles back in 2015 when Blake Bortles was a legitimate top 7 fantasy quarterback. He attempted 606 passes and ran the ball for 310 yards. Like, I don't know if Minshew's got that type of ceiling just because there was so much garbage time that year between Bortles now and Robinson. But in terms of what this offense is going to look like, I think it's going to be a lot of passing attempts and a lot of Minshew taking off and running. So I think that alone, the rushing helps his floor and ceiling. And I know Jared Goff is among the league leaders or led the league in passing attempts last year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Minshew was top three this year. I'll let you talk about Jared Goff, but I will say I am coming around on him 100% because A, I love his receivers. I love Robert Woods. I love Cooper Kupp. The tight end duo was really good in Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. And this team, you I'm sure you'll talk about it, but you add the fact that Todd Gurley and his high percentage of converting touchdowns is gone, and the fact that Jared Goff had a low touchdown rate last year compared to usual, that should balance back out and help Jared Goff in a pretty significant way.
So what I'm going to say here is that if Minshew finishes over Goff, it's because he led the team in rushing touchdowns this year. And people are going to hear that, and they're going to say, okay, well, that's just absolute insane.
Well, he didn't score rushing touchdowns last year, despite Fournette not scoring either.
Also, if you look at what Jay Gruden has done in his last 9 years, his quarterbacks do get rushing touchdowns. I know we talk about this being a fluke in most cases, but if you look at Jay Gruden's history, mm-hmm. 4 of his last 9 years, he's had his quarterbacks have finished with four or more.
Dalton was
rushing
always
touchdowns.
Sneaky in rushing touchdowns. I wrote that up every offseason. He was always a sneaky rushing touchdown guy.
Like, listen to these totals here, Adam. 1, 4, 2, 2, 5, 4, 4, 2.
Are you naming
one.
Marvin Jones weekly finishes this year? That's that's all I heard.
Dude, Minshew, if he is able to beat out Goff, it's because he scored 4 or 5 rushing touchdowns, which I honestly do think is in his range of outcomes.
100%.
He could lead this team in rushing touchdowns this year. And if he beats Goff, it's going to be on the back of rushing equity and things of that nature. And so I think that Jared Goff can beat out Minshew. And the reason is because, dude, he is in for a massive, massive, massive bounce back this year. He dipped to QB 22. Let that sink in for a second. For as good as the Rams were, and they were still a good and high-scoring offense last year, QB 22 in fantasy points per game. Massive outlier, because if you look at the last two seasons prior to that, under McVay, Goff was QB 9 and QB 11 in fantasy points per game. He still chucked the ball at will, third in passing attempts last year, fourth in passing yards. The giant fall off, and we talk about touchdowns are not sticky, he is in for some huge touchdown regression this year. Out of the 42 quarterbacks that passed the ball 100 or more times, Jared Goff finished 33rd out of 42 quarterbacks in passing touchdown percentage. The guys around him, Kyle Allen was at 3.5, the same mark as Jared Goff. Jared Goff was at 3.5%. So Kyle Allen was tied with him. The guy right below him, Dwayne Haskins, Mitchell Trubisky, Delvin Hodges finished 37th. So if you're hearing these names and saying, ooh, dear God, that's bad, that means that Jared Goff is in for more passing touchdowns this year. The volume is still going to be there. The passing yards are going to be there. He doesn't have bad players around him at the skill positions. The touchdowns are coming back. And with that, Jared Goff's stock as far as a fantasy quarterback, because you could get him usually as a middling QB2, that is going to be his floor. He is going to pay off where you get him. I'm not saying that you're going to walk out of your drafts with an A-plus grade from Yahoo or where have you. That's going to be emailed to you that you can boast to your league mates.
I got a D-plus yesterday.
You're going to win in fantasy because every other thing outside of passing touchdowns is not sticky, is showing you that Goff is in for a bounce-back season. So give me Goff, man. Give me the Rams offense. I'm in it.
So I've actually just moved Jared Goff up to quarterback 15, so I moved him ahead of both Ben Roethlisberger and Daniel Jones. Rich Rebar, Reebs from Sharp Football, I'm pretty sure it was him that tweeted out or wrote about how Jared Goff, I think, had like 7 different instances where his pass catcher was tackled at the 1 last year. Like, that's insanely unlucky. And yeah, like, he's going to score more touchdowns because Todd, I know you love Akers and they have Daryl Henderson and Malcolm Brown. I don't think those guys are going to be as efficient at converting touchdowns as Todd Gurley was, at least not right away. And that's going to help Jared Goff. I already wrote about how Robert Woods is definitely going to score more touchdowns this year. So Robert Woods, you look at, and that obviously correlates with Jared Goff, but you know, Robert Woods, there was 60 instances since 2000, I think it was 15. I'm going to go find the exact number because I wrote about it in my ESPN ADP value article that's up on the site. So yeah, there was, since 2015, I was looking at Pro Football Reference, there have been 60 instances where a receiver saw at least 135 targets in a season. Those 60 receivers, if you average their touchdowns per year, was at 7.6. And Woods only had 2 touchdowns receiving last year. It was easily the lowest mark among all those receivers. Like, that is insanely unlucky, and it's just rare to have that few touchdowns on that many receptions. So if he's scoring more touchdowns, and we know Kupp's going to be the red zone guy, and he's been really efficient in that role, then Jared Goff scoring more touchdowns too.
Yeah, I'm in it, man. And so I want everybody to take all of this with and digest all of these debates that we just had, these 5, because when you get into your drafts, you're going to stare at all of these players on the board. So you get into round 3 and 4. Gurley and Johnson are going to be there. You're in round one, the later part of round one. Mixon and possibly Clyde Edwards-Helaire are going to be there. In rounds five and six, DK and Lockett are going to be there. The later rounds, Gardner and Jared Goff are going in the same spots, as well as Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. Take all of these debates to heart. Figure out where you side, but also be flexible in your drafts. Know where you compare, know where you can pivot, and you can still dominate. So I want everybody to digest this. Think about these things before they get into their drafts, because once you get on the clock, the last thing that either I or Adam want, I don't want you to time out on the clock. Get your guys, dominate your leagues. So Adam and I, we got one more episode this week. Again, we're going to be rocking three episodes a week. Next week, we turn over to the in-season schedule. So Monday, we are going to be diving into guys you need to go get on your waiver wire and really need to cultivate before they blow up in week one. Wednesdays, we're going to have our trade for episode. So diving into players you need to be trading for or trading away in your leagues. And Thursday, game by game action, all the things for DFS. So get subscribed, get ready to dominate your drafts. Let's go, baby. Week one is on the horizon. So for Fade the Chalk, we're out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.